All right, so today we are in the Good and Trustworthy Servant, part 12. All right, now, I'm going to be launching now into the idea of trustworthy, but I have a few more things to set up with good to lead into this, and you'll understand in a minute why. So let's begin with reading the section, just to refresh ourselves, in Matthew 25, where this launches. We'll begin in verse 13. Okay, where it says, "Watch therefore, because you do not know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Adam is coming." Okay, so the things that we need to be doing, we need to be doing them right away all the time because we don't know when he's coming. Okay? "For it is like a man going from home who called his own servants and delivered his possessions to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and another 1, to each according to his own ability, and went home." Went from home. Okay? So he went from home. He gave these things out. Now, bear in mind, this is still talking about you. Yes, he was talking about them. He's talking about you. So each one is given according to your abilities. Don't ever compare you to somebody else, but you are given according to your abilities. What he wants to see is what you do with what he gave you according to your abilities. Okay? Okay, and here he had received the 5, went and worked with them, did something with it, and made 5 more. In the same way, who had 2 and gained 2 more. Okay, so they're all kind of staying up to the par of where their ability level, each according to his ability. The one he gave 2, he expected him to get 2 more. He didn't expect him to get 10 more. The one he gave 5, he expected to get 5 more. Okay? In the same way, that happened with the 2. "But he who had received the 1 went away and dug in the ground and hid the silver of his master. And after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them." Now, by the way, the talents is silver. And so he gave them something that they needed to invest and make an effort with. So I don't want you to be thinking talents like church taught you about spiritual gifting. So I need to have a gift of a word of knowledge or a word of this or a word. No, that's not what it's talking about. It says whatever he's given you. Maybe he's given you a great personality of friendship. Maybe he's given you that ability to sit and listen to people. Maybe he's given you the ability to physically do some things. Like we have a lot of the shamish guys who can go and take care of some of the physical needs. Whatever the talents he's given you, what are you doing with it, okay? Now, it said, "After a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received 5 came and brought the 5 other talents, saying, 'Master, you gave me 5, and see, I've gained 5 more. And his master said to him, 'Well done, you're good and trustworthy servant. So you've been doing what I expected with what I gave you.'" So part of being a good servant is doing what he expects. They did not, with the silver, go and like be servants in his house necessarily. As a servant of the master, they did with whatever he was given and did something with it. He expected them to make more with it. Take what I gave you and multiply it in some way. Okay, so as a servant, he expects those things. He doesn't just expect you necessarily to be, you know, sweeping the floors and doing the dishes, that thing for him. He said, "I gave you something. I wanted when I come back to see that you did something with it." All right? "And his master said to him, 'Well done, good and trustworthy servant. You were trustworthy over a little,'" even though this is the one with the 5. He said, "I only gave you a little, but you were trustworthy with it. So I'm going to set you over much. I'm going to give you authority over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Same thing happens with the one with the 2. So we don't have to read all that. I said, "Hey, master, you gave me 2, I got 2 more. And he says the same thing to him. "But to the one," verse 24, "who had received the 1 talent, also came and said, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you had not sown and gathering where you had not scattered seed.'" In other words, he said, "Look, I knew you were a hard man." Like, he's not even saying like you're hard, like you're tough. He says, "You expect me to do all this? I expected you to do stuff. You're the master." This is that Christian mindset, I think, is being talked about here, of expecting the creator and the above to do everything for you. "So I just took what you gave me and I just buried it. Because I was expecting you to provide all that stuff. What did you expect me to do?" And how many times do I have to tell you he is expecting you to do? That's the whole point of the parable. Okay, he expects us to do. He said, "Reaping where you had not sown and gathering." In other words, why would I have to do all the work? Like, you're going to reap from it. I'm doing all the work. He says, "And being afraid, I went and hid your talent in the ground." So he's more afraid of losing by trying to invest it and do something with it than gaining. All right? Some of you are so afraid of failing, you don't try. whatever it is in life. You got a fear of failure problem. And that's a big problem out there. Actually, you know what? There's two fears that are almost equal. Fear of failure is a little bigger. There's also the fear of succeeding. Because people are afraid, well, what if it works? Then what? Now what do I do? How am I going to handle the success? Because now that, because success, you know what that really means? You've gone from this level to this level. So now there's a different expectation, a different all kinds of things happening at a new level. What do I do at this new level? I don't know how to be at that new level. So there's a fear of that too. How are people going to look at me at this new level? How are my friends going to treat me? How's my family going to treat me at this new level? Am I going to be able to maintain it? And then what about the expectation to go to the next level? I mean, you guys are aiming at the highest level of life there is called the kingdom, aren't you? So this is helping to prepare you mindset-wise for that. So his master answers in verse 26, and he says, said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap what I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Then you should have at least invested it with the bankers. And at my coming, you would have had at least what I gave you plus interest. He says, therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who's had 10, the one who did the most. Okay? Interesting. For to the one who possesses, more shall be given, and he shall have overflowing. But from him who does not possess, even that he possesses shall be taken away. Now, when he says possesses, he's not saying the one who possesses, meaning because he gave everybody something. He's saying the one who did something with it shall be given more. And the one who doesn't, even what they have will be taken away. And all of you have. Oh, you may not see it. You may not know. And please don't come up to me and ask me to tell you what your talent is or your gift or your whatever. Because people are going to do that. Figure out, and I've talked about this many times, the idea of gifting versus sort of a common ability at anything. That which you do easily, naturally, and well is probably a gift. That which you struggle with is something that you have a more of a common level of because you have to work harder to do it. Okay? Some of you, no problem at all to figure out anything mechanically. Others of you are like, are you kidding me? I can't do anything mechanically. All right? So you don't have that gift. Some of you have a gift of speaking, of gab. Some of you don't. Some of you have the gift of music. Some of you don't. Some of you have the gift of numbers. Some of you don't, working with math. Some of you have, I'm just saying, we're all different. So how do you identify your gift? What are you good at? Well, I'm not good at anything. Seriously? You're good at something, but you're just not allowing yourself to see it because you maybe don't think the something you're good at is important enough. That's where the problem is. See, because you think of the things you think are important and you're not good at those things. But there's other things you're good at that are just as important, maybe sometimes even more important than some of the things you might have thought of before, and you don't even want to recognize them because it's not what you think. Because I've had people come, this is a perfect example of the idea. The servant thing, I say this often enough. Back in the days, especially when we had, you know, our feasts, we still have them now, but back when we had our feasts, and I would have a head shamish around that, you know, would normally send people to different tasks who wanted to help and serve, people, of course, would come up to me because they want to impress me that they're doing something or they want to help me directly. And if you know me, I don't need it. And I also don't want it. I like to do my stuff, okay? And guess what? If I have anything I don't want to do, I'll find somebody and give it to them. I don't need you to ask me. I've already dealt with anything I don't want to do and delegated it to somebody else. Okay? So anything I'm currently doing, it's because I want to do it. But then these people think they want to serve. So this is how we test that out. I say, great, go over there, talk to that guy right there. He's the head shamish, and he'll give you something to do. And you know what? They don't always like what he gives them to do. Okay, listen, we really need the garbage in the kitchen taken to the dumpster. Hey, the toilet in the second toilet over there is clogged. Can you go fix that? Grab a vacuum. We just ate. Can you just go ahead and vacuum the floor? Whatever it was. So, you know, where is it that you really aren't understanding what serving is all about? Okay? And so this is where we check the heart. Okay? Are you, because some of you, if I ask you, say, oh, whatever Abba says, I'll do whatever he says. I don't care what it is. I'll sweep, in the kingdom, I'll sweep toilets and bathrooms and I'll wash, I'll do whatever. I don't care. I just want to be in the kingdom. Well, where are you showing that now? Where's the proof of that now? Why aren't you doing that now? Where's the issue? Look, one of the guys who impressed me more than anybody else in my journey of running feasts and stuff was a guy who was 65 years old. He just turned 65, and he spent the whole feast vacuuming. Okay? He just decided to volunteer and grab the vacuum after every meal. We were in a place that had carpeting and stuff, and he vacuumed after every meal. Okay? And he came up to me and says, Rabbi, I want you to understand, I don't like to vacuum. I said, then why have you been doing it all week? He says, because Abba talks to me when I vacuum. Not like voice. He says, but I feel inspired when I'm serving like that, that's when I connect with him well. And he told me in 65 years, that was the best week of his life. The guy vacuumed every day. And I believed him because he was serving. Okay? Look, I have the best feast ever. Every time I have a feast, it's great. And I don't get anything like what you guys get. Okay? I'm always working throughout the entire 7 days. There's no break. But I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing during the feast. Okay? And I receive so much blessing seeing that you were blessed and doing that serving. And I know those of you that serve, some of you, when you realize how good it is, want to sign up for 6 and 7 shifts because you get it. Okay? And we don't want you to do that. We want you to also be fed as well as doing the serving. But everybody should want to do that more. Because, again, this whole teaching series, we didn't get the servant yet. It's not going to be fun when we get there, probably. But are you understanding that this is about being good and trustworthy as a servant? Okay? Now, we defined good quite a bit. So I wanted us to kind of go through this again so we could go through this idea of what the actual parable is talking about. Now, in doing so, we're going to now start to focus a little bit on the word trustworthy. But before we do so, I want us to make sure we got the right context of how we look at trustworthy by how we were looking at good. Okay? So when we were looking at good, we were looking at it through the perspective of that there is none good but one, as defined by Yeshua in Matthew 19, verses 16 and 17. All right? So in Matthew 19, verses 16 and 17, it says, "And see, one came to him and said, 'Good teacher, what shall I do? What do I do to receive everlasting life?' And he said, 'You're a moron. You don't have to do anything. Just believe in me.'" He didn't say that, did he? He said, first he said, okay, he said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except one, Elohim." So he wants to make sure that the perspective was all that is good comes from the above and is defined by the above. Now he did say, "But if you want to enter into life, keep the commands, guard the commands." Okay? Isn't that in every Christian Bible? So how do you get rid of the idea that Yeshua would ever want to do away? How do you get that idea he would want to do away with commandments? Well, commandments have nothing to do with salvation or everlasting life. Well, he just said it did, literally. The guy asked him, "How do I have eternal life?" And he said, "Well, you need to keep the commands." Is there any weird, ambiguous gray area here? Did he say something really deep and hidden? He said, "If you want to enter into life, guard the commands," which is exactly what Moses told them, right? "I lay before you life and death. Choose life." And so, in case you're wondering what he was talking about, I said, "Well, which ones?" And Yeshua said, he started naming some of the Ten Commandments. Okay? Now, people say, "Oh, but he only named those, and those are the only ones." No, he's just giving an example. He's saying, those are what I'm talking about, right? And the young man said, "I've done all of these things. So what am I missing?" He says, "Your head's wrong, and your heart's wrong." And then he kind of pointed out the issue with the young man. Okay? So, all good is defined by the above. So in Deuteronomy 6, verses 24 and 25, you can turn there real quick. So Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 24 and 25. So in 24 it says, "And Yahweh commanded us to do all these laws, to fear Yahweh our Elohim for our good, always to keep us alive as it is today. And it is righteousness for us when we guard to do all his command, which he has commanded." So here again, he's saying that the commandments, which are from the above, are for our good. So doing them also is called righteousness, means we're doing what's right. Okay? It is righteousness for us when we do them. So people want to say in Christianity, no, our righteousness comes from Messiah. Well, they're not 100% wrong with that because, after all, he is the walking, talking Torah. But they're trying to make it sound like he did it all and that it's his doing of righteousness that somehow benefits us instead of us having to do anything. Now, his righteousness benefits us because if he wasn't righteous, his death would have meant nothing. Okay? Now, then we have in Deuteronomy 10, and in verse 12, it says, "Now Israel, what is Yahweh your Elohim asking of you but to fear Yahweh your Elohim, walk in all his ways, love him, serve him, okay, with all your heart, with all your being, and to guard the commands of Yahweh which and his laws which I command you today, which are for your good." Oh. Okay, so this is part of the definition of good from the above, and we're told that the Torah is part of how we become good because these are things that are good to do. He defines it, all right? So Elohim defines something as good. Now, this is important. I didn't cover this in the other teaching. The other was a review. I left this out. I forgot it. I'm going to put it in here. His definition of good is when it performs or functions as originally designed or intended by him. Okay? That's his definition of good. When something performs or functions as originally designed and intended, then he says, that's good. So when you hear Yeshua saying, well done, good and trustworthy, he says, you're doing what I intended you to be. You are functioning as designed. Now, let's look at Creation Week. Okay, we look at Creation Week. Now, as you look at Creation Week, you know after he did certain things, he said, and it was good. Don't look at it. Don't look it up right this second. Did he not say good about any of the days? Or did he say about all of them? Was there any day where he didn't say it was good? What day? Day 2, that's correct. And day 7. Now understand what's going on here. Functioning as designed. What happens on day 2? He separates space-time. He creates space, right? So he just creates a place for something to happen, okay? What happens on day 7? He creates space, a time, a day of rest, all right? All the other days, he creates things that are now functioning as intended. The sun, the moon, and the stars, human beings, the plants, the trees, the animals, all right? So after each one of those days, he says, and it was good. Now with day 6, he has it was good, and then he creates man, and he looks at everything and says it was tov me'od. It was very good, okay? So again, things doing as originally designed and functioning as intended are called good. Before we actually took over and messed it all up. It was good, okay? I mean, go back to Genesis 1 and you'll see that, right? So in Genesis 1, and let's see, I got in verse 4. Okay, let me turn, I got the wrong page here. Okay, verse 4. So Elohim saw the light, says day 1, saw the light and it was good, and he separated light from the darkness. He saw that it was good, okay? And then he made an expanse, doesn't mention anything about whether it's good or not. Then he says in verse 10, he says, and Elohim called the dry land earth and the collection of waters are called seas, and Elohim saw that it was good. Then in verse 18, he says, and this is when he talks about the sun and the moon, etc. He says, and the rule over the day and over the night, to separate the light from the darkness, he saw that it was good. Okay? Then in verse 21, he's talking about the sea creatures. Okay? And at the end of verse 21, he says, and Elohim saw that it was good. And then verse 25, okay, Elohim made every beast of the earth, okay, and of its kind, etc. And at the end of the verse, he said it was good, okay. And then we get to the creation of man, and at the very end of day 6, he says, Elohim saw all that he had made, and see, it was very good, in verse 31. Oh, okay. Interesting, all right, interesting. So as we're going through all of this, let's understand that he, as a definition, because we're going to do this for trustworthy. I'm trying to lay this out so trustworthy makes sense. Because they're both going to be defined the same way. By the way, so is servant. It's defined by how he intended it, how he functions, and how he desires us to function. Okay? So he tells us what is good. So hopefully we kind of see that a little bit more. Okay? And the same thing with why didn't he say that about day 2? And he doesn't necessarily say that about day 7 either, is because he's now creating space for things to happen. So there's nothing happening yet. When we, how we deal with the Sabbath, he might call it good or not. You understand? It's a space. Just like he had to create the space for all of the creation to take place in. Okay? But he started by putting light into it. He brought, listen to the teaching, Yeshua, the light of the world. So he brings light, he brings Yeshua, he brings the Torah, the truth into existence so that everything then can be created to function in that reality, okay? So hopefully that was profound enough to give you what you needed for today, okay? Now, so we're gonna look at the word trustworthy, or the idea of being trustworthy, from the same perspective as being defined by Elohim. So first we're gonna look at verses that talk about him being trustworthy. And we're going to see the context of what he's talking about in terms of trustworthiness, and then we can then extrapolate what that means in terms of us being trustworthy. Because after all, in Matthew, it said, well done, talking about the person, not the creator, you good and trustworthy servant. All right, so let's see what we can do to define trustworthy. Let's go to Deuteronomy 7, okay? Deuteronomy 7, and we're going to look at verse 9. Now, for some of these, we're going to do like we've been doing in the past. We're going to need like a whole lot of verses to kind of define the one verse we're going to start with, okay? So you can see the context that's in there. So in verse 7, I mean chapter 7 and verse 9, okay? Chapter 7, Deuteronomy, verse 9. And you shall know that Yahweh your Elohim, he is Elohim, the trustworthy El, guarding covenant, and kindness for 1,000 generations with those who love him and those who guard his commands. Okay, so pay attention now. He is Elohim, and he is the trustworthy El. But then look at what comes right after that. He's trustworthy doing what? He's guarding covenant. I'm going to put out there as my one of my little points to make over the course of the dealing with trustworthy is that us keeping covenant is how we show our trustworthiness. It is one of the elements of trustworthiness he's looking for. He keeps covenant and he's trustworthy. We need to keep covenant to show we're trustworthy. All right? Now, if you don't know what covenant is, go listen to the teaching. I know it's a shocking title for it. Are you covenanted? Okay? Try to make the title simple for you to know what the topic is. Okay, I know it's 55 parts. It's the most important 55 parts you'll ever listen to. If you don't know what covenant it is, you don't know what you're doing. It is the definition of the relationship he wants with you. He wants you to covenant, all right? But he's trustworthy guarding his part of the covenant. So we have to be trustworthy guarding our part of the covenant. He also is trustworthy with showing kindness. So we need to show kindness. And he says that the ones that he does this to are those who love him and those who guard his commands. And listen to the teaching, love and Torah, which kind of links these things. Everywhere you see love, him, and Torah is always connected to it. Commands are always connected to it. So I don't know how, and again, I'm not picking on all of you Christians. It's the system that you're sort of stuck in, although you are free to leave, all right? But that system is trying to tell you that you can love him and not guard his commands. That's not what he says. You know, even Yeshua says, if you love me, guard the commands. People say, well, no, we just have to do what he said. Well, he said this right here too. Go listen to the Father and the Son. Okay? But you're reading into it, guard my commands, when Yeshua said it. He's saying guard the commands. Now, he's claiming the commands are his. I agree. Okay? But guard the commands. So let's kind of get the context of what's going on here, okay? So the Hebrew word translated trustworthy here in the scriptures and faithful in most translations, many of the popular translations say faithful. I think we need to really get a better sense of this word because people say, you know, about, they use the word faith, like I'm a person of faith or, you know, how strong is your faith or I'm faithful. The word at the root of this, aman, which is the root of emunah, okay? It's the root of emunah. So emunah is not only are we believing or have faith and belief that Yahweh is in control, we trust it. We trust that everything is either caused or allowed by him. It's a trust, not just a belief. We trust it. Okay? So this trustworthy and faith kind of fit together. Being faithful and trustworthy kind of fit together. Okay? So in some translations, it won't say trustworthy, it'll say faithful. All right? I think trustworthy is more clear for us in terms of understanding what the word means. Faithful, it gets a little weird because we think of us being faithful, not necessarily him being faithful. Because we would be, that's more of a loyalty thing. All right? Which again, loyalty is part of trustworthiness. Why would you be loyal to somebody you don't trust? Okay? Why would someone trust you if you won't be loyal to them? All right? You have those issues going in both directions. All right? So this word, aman, means to be firm or faithful, to trust or believe, to be loyal, to be permanent, morally, to be certain or true. That's what he means when he wants you to be trustworthy. And you can count on him to be trustworthy. All right? So let's go to the beginning of the chapter and see the context that leads to his saying in verse 9, and you shall know that Yahweh, your Elohim, he is Elohim, and he's trustworthy. So look at verse 1. When Yahweh, your Elohim, brings you into the land which you go to possess. So where's the context? He's saying, when you go to where I'm sending you, which is, in our case, Cleveland, Tennessee. All right? No, but when he says, I'm gonna bring you into the place, all of us want to be in the kingdom. So for us, that's the place, okay? When I bring you into that place. Now he says, he's going to clear away many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and all the other ites, okay? And when Yahweh Elohim gives them over to you, you shall smite them and put them under the ban completely. Make no covenant with them and show them no favor. So what he's trying to say is, I'm going to bring you somewhere. And when I bring you there, it's not going to be perfect when you get there. There's going to be issues. Just like when he popped your bubble, started showing you the truth, all of a sudden, every issue in your life didn't go away. Matter of fact, some new ones popped up. Or ones that were always there, you didn't realize were a problem. Now you realize, oh, that's a problem. So he's saying is, you have to, listen, he says, he shall clear away the nations, okay? But then you're going to think, like a Christian, and think he's just going to do it. No, no. He says when Yahweh Elohim gives them over to you, you're going to do this work, okay? He's going to give them over to you, meaning it's going to be your responsibility to set your boundaries with all your family and friends, to clear out what needs to be cleared out. He says he wants you to smite them and put them under the ban. That is to destroy completely these nations. Now, you're not going to do that to your friends and family, but you understand what I'm saying? In other words, you need to have that separation created there. He doesn't want you to be influenced by them. He says, make no covenant with them and show them no favor. Yet you guys are still super overly influenced by people not in covenant. You just are. And you still hang out with them. When I say hang out with them, I mean not your friends when you're growing up. I mean the ones who were actively against what the Father's doing or could lead you away and you could make covenant with them or could tempt you in some way. Look, he's going to be more clear. He says, I want you not to intermarry with them. Don't give your daughter to his son and don't take his daughter for your son because he turns your sons away from following me to serve other mighty ones. So you need to, in type and shadow of this, make sure in your life you're not, merging yourself with those and that are doing these things that could lead you away from him. So if somebody is thrown outside the camp, why do you hang out with those people who are doing the things and did the things to get thrown outside the camp? If somebody is actively, and you hear them or know that they're saying stuff negatively against your beliefs, your leadership, the Creator himself, the Torah observance, whatever it is, why would you enmesh yourself with them? Which is the idea of intermarrying, not literally, but for you, but why would you be so enmeshed? Because what is a marriage? It's two people becoming echad, one. Why are you so close with these people? I'm not telling you to be mean to them or anything, right? We're supposed to be kind. But why do you allow the potential level of influence to turn you away from following him? And this is what happens all the time. We see this all the time, okay? He says, then the displeasure of Yahweh shall burn against you and promptly destroy you. Not them, you, for you being foolish, for your choices. He says, but this is what you are to do. Break down their altar, smash their pillars, cut down their asherim, and burn their carved images with fire. Now, you can't do that today to anybody. Okay? But don't accept them if they want to give them to you, and don't you dare have them in your house. Okay? He says, because this is the key, verse 6. You are a set-apart people to Yahweh your Elohim. Go listen to the teaching, be set apart. If you can't figure that out, what it means to be set apart. So you're a set-apart people. He says, Elohim, Yahweh your Elohim has chosen you to be a people for himself. He's zealous about you being his, the loyalty, the trustworthiness to be his, and not to divide your loyalties. Okay? He says, I want you to love me with everything. That's in Deuteronomy 6. That's prior to this chapter, right? Deuteronomy 6, 5 says, and you shall love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, with all your might, with all your being. Well, you can't do that if you have a divided heart. Okay? And so, you know, where your heart is, your treasure is, et cetera, et cetera. So let's be careful with that. He says, Yahweh has chosen you to be a people for himself, a treasured possession above all the peoples on the face of the earth. Yahweh did not set his love on you nor chose you because you were more numerous than any other people, for you were the least of all peoples. In other words, don't get your you know, ego all messed up. Don't get all prideful about somehow, you know, it has to do with something with us. He said, but because of Yahweh loving you and because of him guarding the oath which he swore to your fathers, Yahweh has brought you out with a strong hand and redeemed you from the house of bondage, from the hand of Pharaoh, sovereign of Mitzrayim. Then it gets into, and you shall know that Yahweh your Elohim, he is Elohim and trustworthy. See, he led into telling you he's trustworthy by telling you, I'm expecting you to be trustworthy too. I'm expecting you, and trustworthy how? Stop mingling and being of the world. You're in the world, you're not of the world. Oh, but I'm still, my friends, you know, still, okay, whatever. Make new friends. Do you really think that none of these people had friends in Egypt when they left, that they left behind, or friends wherever it was when he called them out, etc.? Of course they're going to have friends. But are those friends causing you to grow in the right direction, or are they causing you to stumble and go in the wrong direction? All right? Because he wants you to be trustworthy. And he's watching your choices, the relationships that you have. Look, some of you listening right now really need to hear this, okay? And because you're going to be mad at me because I get counseling sessions about this on a regular enough basis. Okay? If you are single, I'm not talking about you already married. If you're already married and you're unequally yoked because one of you had your bubble pop and the other didn't, you can call for help, etc. That's not your fault, okay? You were equally yoked when you got married to whatever degree. You're probably on the same page. But here's the thing, though. If you're single and you're not, okay, of the world anymore, you're covenanted now, right? Why would you still think about marrying someone who's not where you are? Oh, but I love him. I love her. Okay, and you're going to counsel with me when you're ready to get a divorce because it can't work that way. All right? And you're thinking, man, this sounds so controlling cultish. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you that it's a really bad idea to do what you're already doing because it won't work. So this is a warning, okay? It will not work. So I have empathy for your loneliness. All right? I wasn't single forever, but for me, for my world, I came out of being single and all the way to 35 years old was a long time. Okay? That was long. And you know what? It's not that I didn't have opportunity, but I did not want to just marry anybody just to not be lonely. Okay? And in my 20s, when I started having beliefs, I wanted to make sure that person had the same beliefs I did because my beliefs were important. I was covenanting. Okay, started at 23. So I was 12 years covenanted by the time I got married. But I wasn't going to marry anybody outside of that. Okay? And some of you need to understand, I'm sorry, because you were dating when your bubble got popped. And don't tell me, oh, but they're okay with what I'm doing. Yeah, sure they are right now. Doesn't usually work that way going forward, though. And don't think they're going to bubble pop just for you. You don't bubble pop them. He does. He opens their eyes, not you. And sure, they want you, they want to marry you, so they'll say whatever they need to say until they say, I do, then it changes right quick. Okay? I had a horrible experience that a friend of mine had. Man, we were together and we were Torah observant, believers in Messiah, and he had this girl that he was all excited about who claimed she was good with it all and she was all going to be into it and everything, even though she wasn't. And right after they got married, she went full on back to mainstream Christian, whatever she was doing, and he ended up in a divorce and ended up really being broken in that area where he couldn't get married again. He couldn't trust. You know? And so it really destroyed him in some ways. Well, he allowed it to. I tried to encourage him not to allow that, but he had made a bad choice. He should just own that it was a bad choice. Okay? But you guys got to recognize that picking a forever relationship cannot be it can't be emotionally driven. I'm not saying you can't have emotion. You should really desire your spouse. Okay? I adore my wife. Okay? But I didn't marry her just because of that. I married her because I felt we could be walking together, two walking in agreement, all right? And a big part of that agreement is where we're going in the bigger picture than just this physical world. What's the bigger, are we in agreement with that, all right? And so I'm telling all of you out there, you become single, like say you're getting a divorce or whatever, or if you're already single, do not do this, okay? It's a terrible idea. Do not go and intermarry with them, all right? But I'm lonely. But she's so hot, he's so hot, he's so cute. Stop all that, okay? Stop all that. There were many really pretty women that I met in my life that once I started talking to them, realized we were not going to be walking in the same direction. And it wasn't just necessarily spiritually. It could have been other things too. But you have to recognize there's more than physical attraction. Okay? Only thing is, I had, as a very red, not blue person, okay, back to the color code stuff, right, the personality stuff, I was very quick to say, nope, boom, end the relationship before it even hardly got started because I wasn't looking for something that wasn't going to complete itself in a marriage. Okay? And so I didn't waste time with those things. Okay, so if I dated anybody, it was going to be very quick. So I didn't date anybody for very much time until I met my wife. And then I found somebody we could walk together, right? And so, of course, it was nice. By the time you're 30, hopefully you're 35 years old, you know, yes, physical attraction, and my wife's gorgeous, but physical attraction was not the biggest thing for me at that point. Because I realized that could be, you know, a fool's distraction. But what about the meeting of the minds that we have? And not just spiritually, but like, you know, do we have similar cultural interests? Do we have similar, you know, entertainment interests? What can we talk about? What are we going to do together? Where does she want to go in life? Where do I want to go in life? Focus on those things. But I'm telling all of you guys, we didn't have this to go to, okay? This didn't exist, what I've offered you, right? There was no congregation like this to go to. What you guys who are single should be thinking is, well, not only don't I want to intermarry with them, I'm not going to marry anybody that's not in this particular ministry under this covering. Because how else can you know the commitment levels? And they should, by the way, already be not telling you they're willing to be, okay? Because I wouldn't trust that necessarily. Because I've had that happen a few times, and then when somebody had a problem in their marriage, and the one who's more with us wants me to counsel them, and the other one says no, that shows that they're really not, both of them really weren't on that same page. But if both of you are committed under the same covering, you know what that means? You could both sit with me, and you could trust that I'm not taking sides. I'm going to give you both what you need to hear, because you both submitted and trust that authority. Again, it's all about trust. All the people that do well in this ministry, I mean really well, a lot of people do well anyway, but I mean, who do really well? They trust the leadership, okay? They trust what the leadership brings. Somebody said that today during the praise and prayer. I said, listen to what the leadership says, okay? Because the results will come. And that's the way he designed it, by the way, all right? But this whole thing here, he's trusting you not to make this mistake. Because all of this here, when he says, when I bring you into the land, And in some ways, he's starting the process of bringing you into the land and waking you up and showing you what's going on. He says, you need to get rid of all things of that old life. Don't love them anymore. Get rid of them, etc. And do not intermarry with. By the way, that doesn't just talk about marriage. Why would you be this way with a close friend who's going to continually try to pull you away from what you're doing? You might just need to downgrade the level of interaction with those friends. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be cultish. I'm trying to protect you. Okay? Because he says the problem is they may, listen, turn you away from following him and to serve other ones. That can happen. You know, there are some people that have left here that I know left here because they were influenced by people who left here. Okay? All who hang out. It's so funny. I will hear someone left, and then interestingly enough, the people that they hang out with all the time eventually left too. Strange. Where do you think the influencing was coming from? Is it just way out there for me to make some guess that there's a high chance that they were influenced? Not actively influenced, where the person was saying, well, you need to leave there, but just influenced. Because you spend time with those people all the time. So that's why we as a leadership will sometimes get confused when we see your Facebook posts all hanging out with people that have left. And we're just thinking, you're playing with fire. Okay? You might not see it that way, but you are. You know? You're just playing with fire. That's your choice. You have freedom to do that. Like I said, leadership's not mad at you. We're just confused and don't understand why. You don't understand that you're playing with fire. But you are. Okay, let's read more of the chapter here because I have the rest of it for us to really see what is going on. So he gives you this beginning about what we need to be doing. Then he says, don't forget, he is Elohim and he is the trustworthy El. Okay, and what's he focusing on? Guarding his covenant. Okay, guarding his covenant with who? Those who love him and those who guard his commands. Now it says, verse 10, but he repays to those who hate him to their face to destroy them. He does not delay to do so with him who hates him. He repays him to his face. By the way, this is talking about people that should know better. Well, what about all those ites? Those ites should have known better. We aren't back in those days when everybody kind of was much more connected generationally to the creator of the universe and had rejected on whatever level, okay? You know, we're talking about thousands of years ago when this is happening, okay? Now, he says, and you shall guard the command, verse 11, and laws and right rulings, which I command you today to do them. Anybody think that Yahweh ever wastes his breath? Does he waste his breath? No. Does he say anything that's just for no reason? So when he says this, how do we get to the laws are done away with, they're bad for us, nailed to the cross? How do you get there? He says, I want you to guard the command. Oh, that was for them. I want to be them. Why wouldn't you want to be them? They're the ones who have a rally. He says, these are the ones, you ready for this? He says, these are the ones he's chosen to be a people for himself. A treasured, why wouldn't you want to be them? Of course you should want to be them. He didn't say, I chose them and I chose other people too and whatever. No, I chose them. Good news is you get to become part of the them that they, I mean, you get to join the Commonwealth of Israel. Okay? Through covenant. Through covenant. All right? And it shall be because you hear these right rulings and shall guard to do them, verse 12, that Yahweh your Elohim shall guard with you the covenant and the kindness which is what of your father. He's saying, look, if you do your part, I'll do my part. You can trust me to do my part. I'm not sure I can trust you to do yours. That's what he's saying. He says, and you shall love, excuse me, and he shall love you and bless you and increase you. And shall bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your cattle, the offspring of your flock and the land which he swore to your fathers to give you. So he's saying, I'm giving you the incentives for this. First of all, I'm going to do my part. You can count on it. I'm going to remind you what my part is. If you do your part, you're going to be blessed. I'm going to love you. I'm going to increase. I'm going to do all these blessings. This is only chapter 7. This isn't even like chapter 28 when he goes really into the blessings and the cursings, right? Okay, but this is some of the blessings. He says, verse 14, blessed are you above all the peoples. Okay, I want every Christian to listen. Blessed are you above all the peoples if. He didn't say blessed are you just because blessed are you. He said, if you are the one who covenants, guards the commands, what he said in verse 12. He said, it shall be because you hear and do, that blessed are you above all the peoples. Those people who are hearing and doing. What was the covenant? If you will hear and do. That was the covenant, right? Exodus 19. If you will obey every word that comes out of my mouth. So you're going to hear it and do it. He says, there is not going to be a barren man or barren woman among you and among your livestock. Yahweh shall turn away from you all the sickness and put none of the evil diseases of Mitzrayim, which you have known, and he shall put them in all those who hate you. He says, and you shall consume all the peoples whom Yahweh your Elohim is delivering over to you. Your eyes shall not pardon them, and do not serve the mighty ones, for that is a snare to you. Okay, look, this is meant for the cohesive nation as a nation in the land. What do you do with that? Well, your eyes shall not pardon them. In other words, stop making excuses for the people you want to spend time with that you shouldn't. Because that's basically you pardoning them, isn't it? Don't pardon them. I'm not saying judge them and then punish them in some way, but stop making excuses. By the way, you do the same thing for all the teachers you shouldn't be listening to. Okay? Because you pardon the fact of how wrong they are in so many ways because you like them. Oh, but I like, you know. But you already know so much of what they're saying is wrong. Why do you pardon that? I can't understand it. All right? But yet, he says, okay, that was verse 16, okay? Because he says, this could lead to you serving their mighty ones, for that is a snare to you. So there's a snare that if you pardon and you make excuses and you don't separate yourself properly from all of this, that you may be snared down their rabbit hole and their path. It's a potential trap for you, but you don't want to see it that way. Look, everybody wants to call this all cultures talking about. This is the creator of the universe telling them you're going to literally destroy and cut off everybody else. That could lead. That's what he says. I mean, he's saying it right there. Don't get mad at me. But how does that look today? I think it has a lot to do with the choices of who you're spending time with and how much time you're spending with them. Okay? I still have friendships with people in the world who I talk to once or twice a year for a few minutes because we have a relationship. But that relationship is not what it was when we were close friends and in the world together. Okay? I'm still being kind. And I'm there available in case they ever come in this direction. But I'd spend very little amount of time enmeshing myself with any of them. Okay? So, where are we now? Verse 17. When you say in your heart, these nations are greater than I'm unable to drive them out. Okay, this is where you start to tell me, well, I can't do this, it's too hard and whatever. Especially dealing with family members. He says, do not be afraid of them. See, some of you, the reason you struggle is because you're afraid, but they're going to cut you off and they're going to hate on you and call you. I have counseling call after counseling call every week of people saying, well, you know, my family members are talking bad about me. If you're not doing anything, then of course they're not going to say anything about you. So of course, if you're doing something that they don't like, they're going to talk bad about you. I said, I don't think you've arrived till somebody's talking bad about you. I get talked bad about every day, okay, by lots of people. Because that's what people do when they don't like or don't agree with what you're doing. They're going to talk bad about you. He said, don't be afraid of them. See, you're afraid. And that's when you start to not trust him because you're afraid. Remember, the most dangerous of all things in your life is fear. You will make all kinds of wrong choices because of fear. You won't do the things you're supposed to do because of fear. That's the whole battle of the whole journey in here is the overcoming of fear. Why does Moses have to just remind even Joshua, be strong and of good courage, right? Be strong and courageous. Okay, Brianna wrote a great song for that, right? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid, right? Well, look, he's saying it right here. He said, don't be afraid of them. Remember what Yahweh Elohim did to Pharaoh and all the tribe. Said they were slaves. They were dealing with slavery, and yet he brought them out. He says, you talk about thinking you're powerless. They were powerless. But they still had to leave. They still had to pack up, gird themselves up, and leave, right? He says, the great trials which your eyes saw, the signs and wonders, the strong hand and outstretched arm, by which Yahweh Elohim brought you out, Yahweh Elohim does so to all the peoples of whom you're afraid. He said, he's going to handle all that stuff, but you got to do your part. First, you got to trust him. And then he's got to be able to trust you. Some of you already have half of it. You think, at least you do, think you do. You trust him. But then you don't demonstrate that you do when you don't behave in a way that shows that you trust him. And that's when you become not trustworthy, right? You're not trustworthy because you're not trusting him. Because the only reason you do the things you shouldn't do is because you're not trustworthy, because you don't trust him. Because you're afraid that, well, if I don't do this thing that somebody's trying to push me to do, something bad's going to happen in my worldly friendship stuff. When really, bad things are going to happen because you're not trusting him. Okay? Now, so Yahweh Elohim also sends a hornet among them until those who are left who hide themselves from you are destroyed. Do not be afraid of them, for Yahweh Elohim, the great and awesome El, is in your midst. Do we not believe that he's in our midst? We believe that we have Ruach HaKodesh, right? We have the Holy Spirit, that he's in us, dwelling amongst us. But do you act like you understand that? Do your choices show that and demonstrate that? I mean, what does it look like, the choices you're making in terms of what he sees? Is it fear? Not of him, but of the world? Go back and listen to the fear of Yahweh teaching over and over again until you finally get it, okay? The only fear you need to have is fear of him. And if you have that fear, you won't ever be afraid of anything else ever again, okay? So just remember that. You got to fear Yahweh and nothing else. All right. He says, and Yahweh shall drive out the nations before you little by little. You're not allowed to destroy them all at once, lest the beasts of the field become too numerous. This is just an encouragement that some of you get overly zealous and think you're going to just fix everything in one day. No. Then what happens is it blows up in your face. Okay? Or like the person who really can't handle it, you know, who starts binge consuming all the teachings, but they're not ready to make those kind of level of adjustment in their life right away. And I've warned people, don't do that. I mean, I'm not saying you can't listen to a bunch of teachings every day, but just know your capacity to handle that level of new information that may really ping out a whole bunch of pillars in your system, okay? And just knock them right out. And that may be more than you can handle. So you got to know you, okay? What's your capacity? Because he's saying here, if you're going to drive everything out all at once, well, then it's going to allow for other beasts to come in and cause all kinds of problems. Because now you created a void. So what happens is, in other words, you can't just realize all of this stuff is wrong and throw it out and not have figured out what's right to put in its place. Okay? So you listen to the Sabbath teaching, you realize, okay, Sunday's wrong. I now need to learn how to do Saturday. But I don't need to find out that Sunday's wrong, Christmas, Easter wrong, eating a certain way is wrong, and all of this stuff on the same day and have no idea what to put in its place. Okay? Because if you consume it so quickly, you might figure out what's wrong very quickly, but learning to do what's right and changing it may take a little more. And then you may feel like, this is too much, I can't do it. I've had people do that. They've quit because they thought it was too much. And by the way, that's the parable of the sower all over again, right? Where all of a sudden things start coming around and making it so you get crushed to the point where you think, I can't handle this. Okay? The cares and the concerns of the world and all kinds of things choke out whatever you're kind of trying to do. This is the average person that gets all excited about being bubble popped, runs to all their family members, and just gets blasted. And if their roots aren't strong enough or they're not strong enough in not being afraid, they quit right away and think, oh my gosh, what kind of dumb thing did I just think of? I must be wrong because all these people I think are so smart just told me what an idiot I am. Okay? He didn't choose the brilliant. Brilliant in their own minds, in other words. He chose those that are willing and able to receive. Some of you are very smart. I'm not saying that has nothing to do with being very smart. But you're not full of yourselves of being smart. You're ready to learn. Okay, so there's being smart, ready to learn, and being smart thinking you already arrived. So he didn't, when he says, I didn't call the brilliant, he meant I didn't call the ones who already think they know everything. I call the ones that have room still to learn and to adjust and to change, right? He says, but Yahweh Elohim, verse 23, shall deliver them over to you and destroy them with a great destruction until they are consumed. Again, you're going to be doing that, not him. He's just going to make it so that you have the ability to do that. He shall give their sovereigns into your hand, shall destroy their name from under the heavens. No one is going to be able to stand against you until they've destroyed. Now, this is, again, talking about the nation, not you. Okay, that's the nation as a nation going into the land. However, this now shifts again to something that could be affecting you. He says, the carved images of their mighty ones you are to burn with fire. Do not covet the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it for yourself, lest you be snared by it, for it is an abomination to Yahweh Elohim. Do not bring an abomination into your house, lest you are cursed like it. Utterly loathe it and utterly hate it, for it is accursed. So, two things here. Number one, don't bring anything into the house that shouldn't be in the house. Number two, when you first are learning, really I should have said this was number one because he said it first, recognize the things that don't belong in your house and get rid of them. But get rid of them doesn't mean, I spent $5,000 on all this Christmas stuff. I'm going to put it on eBay. No, destroy it and throw it out. But it's so much money. He covers that right here. He says, do not covet the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves. Why would you sell it? He wants you to destroy it. Throw it out. Destroy it. Okay? Don't try to financially benefit from something that you recognize now you shouldn't have. Oh, but I spent... Well, you already spent the money. You weren't intending to get it back until you just found out you shouldn't have that stuff. But you get emotionally attached to those things. Okay? Some of you have the biggest problem with the Christmas ornament that Grandma gave me. It's my only thing I have from Grandma. That's nonsense. Okay? That's not the only thing you have from Grandma. It'd be the only physical thing she gave you. You have your relationship and what you know. But it's a Christmas ornament. It goes in the garbage. I don't care who gave it to you. You're like, you know what that means? You're not ready. I'm sorry to tell you that. But if you still have that emotional reaction, you're not ready. You're not doing chapter 6, verse 5. You're not loving him with everything. You're still having some sort of down here in the below emotional attachment that's interfering with your vertical attachments. Okay? It shouldn't matter who gave it to you if it's no good. You don't think it's the same thing. So let's say we're back in Abraham's day. Okay, or Moses' day, and somebody gives you, it's your grandmother, and she gives you this little statue to Molech. Oh, but Grandma gave it to me. And she gave it to you when you also like Molech. But now you realize Molech is not real. Molech is not the true Elohim. But Grandma gave it to me. Sorry, my answer to you is, so what? What is that? I don't understand what that has to do with anything. Grandma's not here, which is why you're all upset about it, okay? And if she's still alive and comes to your house and it's not there, how is she going to know it's not there? You don't have a tree to put it on. What's she going to ask you? Where's the ornament I gave you? Okay? You tell her it's in the garbage for everything else Christmas. But you're afraid. See, it's so funny because there are times when you will want to do more. And you want to do things that you think is more. I want to go preach to people. And I want to go, how about just doing the stuff yourself that you're supposed to do and stop being afraid of it? Why wouldn't you focus on that? Because you've already struggled with that. That should keep you plenty busy. All the things that you know you should do and you don't do it, or that you shouldn't do and you still do it or whatever, you struggle with that enough to keep you busy. Oh, but I want to do more. Well, do more of that. Okay, figure out and fix that. But you're still afraid of what grandma's going to say, what mom is going to say, okay? Family members are having a wedding on a Saturday, and you can't go, and they're all talking bad about you. So what? But you don't understand. What do you mean I don't understand? No, none of you out there has anybody talking bad about you on the level I do, okay? So tell me I don't understand, okay? Nobody left your congregation to go do whatever and then called you every name in the book. You don't have a congregation. You don't know what. Tell me I don't understand. Okay? Now, maybe I don't have family members doing that. But I got plenty to understand. And your family members aren't necessarily writing Facebook posts and all kinds of other things attacking you. I get plenty of that. So again, it all is about you want him to be trustworthy. As a matter of fact, you're counting on it. But he's saying, I'm not giving you any of that stuff if you don't do your part. Your part was to do what I said. So I'm trustworthy to do my part if you do your part, okay? Because my part comes from, actually, he does his part first. He tells us what to do. Then your part is to do it, and then his part is to give us the blessing. So it's kind of a three-step process. He gives us the instruction, we do the instruction, he gives us the blessing. But see, if any part of that step two doesn't happen, step three doesn't happen. Step one happens. He gives everybody the instruction. He pops your bubble. It's on him, right? So he does that. Now it's all sitting in our lap. What are you going to do with it? Because remember, the people that did with the talents did not receive anything until they had finished whatever they were doing with the talents. They had to do their part. So you have to do your part first. He did his part. He gave them the talent. He did his part. He gives us the commandments. He did his part. He sent Yeshua. He did it. You know what I'm saying? He did his part. It's all in your hands now. What are you doing? Oh, but you don't like that. You liked it better in Christianity where he did his part and your part. That's what you like better. Oh my gosh, so it's easier. He did his part and he did my part. So why do you deserve anything? Oh, well, don't say I deserve. Now you're talking about earning. Well, yes, you earn everything. Why would he give you any reward if you don't earn it? Would you give a kid a reward who didn't earn it? Well, some people would. Every kid who participates, whether they win or lose, gets a trophy. That's stupid. Okay? But my kid's going to cry if he loses. It's going to be worse if he gets a trophy for losing. Well, nobody should win or lose. I'm sorry. The best learning you're going to get is from losing. You'll never really win without losing. You have to lose to win. So why would we have that very foolish mindset of thinking that there's any benefit to him doing it for us? How do you benefit from that? Because it would be so much easier. Easier for what? What are you going to do when he puts you in a forever suit and gives you a bunch of responsibility that now you have never shown any ability to do? You're going to fail. Exactly. Forever. Oh, that'll be fun. And I'm sure he'll be very proud of you. See, you want to hear, well done, good and trusty. All the Christians want to hear that too. But why would you hear that if you didn't do anything? First of all, you have to do what's good. You have to be good, whatever good means, right? We talked about that for 11 parts. And then you have to be trustworthy, and you have to serve. And you have to do those things because it's well done. Like, good for you. You did it. Yes. Congratulations. Look, every parent, when their child does something they've been wanting them to do, goes and gives them praise because they did it. You teach the kid to tie their shoes. We don't even do that anymore. You got like Velcro and everything, whatever. But you teach a kid to tie their shoes, and then they go and do it, and you're like, good job, you did it. You teach them to do the dishes. The first time they actually get it done, say, good job, you did it. All right? Tell them to clean their room, and they go and it's cleaned. You give them praise and say, good job. If they don't do it, what happens? They get punishment. That's the way it is in human life. What do you think it is from the above? You're going to get rewarded for not doing it? Any of you reward your kids who didn't do what you told them to do, that is about as dumb as it gets. Okay? Because then they're never going to want to do it because, after all, they get a reward anyway. Don't tell them, if you do this, I'm going to give you a dessert or whatever it is that you're going to do for them. And then they don't do it and you give it to them anyway. See, you're that stupid. He's not. Okay? Don't be that way. He is not going to give you that you did not deserve. Oh, but we just deserve death. Well, you earned that as a potential, but then if you repented and then started turning it around to Teshuvah and started doing what you're supposed to do, then you do end up earning. Okay, deserving. Okay? But you don't want to think of it that way because Christianity's beat that out of your system for 2,000 years. Very aggressively, with a very, very, very bad agenda to totally disempower you from actually hearing the words, well done, good and trustworthy servant. Because they've taken away the only vehicle to get you there, which is acting in covenant or observance. And so then we're like, okay. So he says, look, these things not only are you not to benefit, but you are to look at them as an abomination. Do not ever bring them in your house. Okay, don't bring that stuff in your house. So A, if it's in your house, get rid of it and don't benefit from it. B, don't ever bring anything else in the house that doesn't belong there. Okay? And by the way, that includes other things that could lead you away, not just physical things. It could be teachings of any sort, anything, information, things that will trip you up and lead you away from Yahweh. It should not be in your house. In terms of, you shouldn't be watching it, listening to it, whatever. If it's going to lead you, okay? I'm not saying you can't watch certain things or entertain, whatever. I'm saying the things that will lead you away from Yahweh. More dangerous are listening to teachers that are giving you a mixed sort of Christian, Torah observant, whatever mess. That's more dangerous than just listening to something you know is completely garbage. Okay, because there's no temptation with that at all. But it's a thing that sounds right, but you know it's not exactly. Eventually, you can like it enough that you start listening to it and acting upon it. All right? Look, my sister-in-law threw a fit at one point. She's probably watching, don't get mad at me, because her daughter was in an Adventist school and started thinking and acting like she was Adventist. And I said to her, I said, what do you expect? That's what she deals with all day. If you're immersed in something, it's going to make you into whatever you're immersed in. You understand? It can't not happen that way. So the more you immerse yourself in teachers that are not teaching the right way with all things, but you just happen to like certain things about them, the more you're going to become like them. You're going to think like them. You're going to start making choices and decisions based on their teachings. Choose your teachers wisely. Because that's a very, very strong influence and should be on you. All right? Look, there's a reason why the studies that have been out there and have been talked about this in all personal development world is that you are going to be, if you to do the study on it, you're like basically the average of the top five people you spend most of your time with. Okay? They say if we looked at the five people you spend most of your time with, you are going to be a conglomeration average of what they're all about. Entertainment-wise, financially, health-wise, choice, all these choices, you're going to be kind of, so you got to really choose who you spend most of your time with. Because that level of influence is tremendous. And by the way, don't think you're influencing them. Because everybody's like, well, I'm influencing them. Really? How many people do you know that hang out with those people end up either acting worldly or coming into Torah? More the other way, isn't it? Okay? Okay, it doesn't say one good apple makes the bad apples good. But one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. Okay? Just saying. You know, Star Wars, they say, you know, the beware of the dark side, it's very powerful. The dark side is very powerful. Okay? It's very easy and tempting to go onto the dark side, so to speak. Listen to darkness and light. It's very tempting and very powerful. It's not stronger than light, but it's an easier path. In other words, the temptation is great because it appears to be an easy path to whatever it is you're looking for. Life seems easier to just go along to go along. But where you want to go, that path will never get you there. So you got to be aware of that and not be going down that path. You know, this is really challenging, okay? This is going to be really challenging. All right. So we barely got started. I was going to go into a whole lot of other things, but we're not going to have time for that at this point because I can't believe that already took care of 70 minutes. All right. So let's close this first part of the trustworthy, which is part 12 of the good and trustworthy servant teaching, with going to the Father. Father, we come before you, and Father, we are really, really desiring. I mean, our biggest desire is to hear those words. I mean, we don't know if that's literally what you're going to say to us, but it's the idea of you looking at us and saying, well done. I gave you a journey of life for so many years, and you did well. Well done. And you were good because you were aligning with me. You were trustworthy in the things I gave you to do, and you trusted me, and you served. And so, Father, we are just thankful that you give us so much in your word so we can understand what those terms really mean, what your expectations are in the relationship, so we can understand what you want in terms of covenant and what that should look like. It's not just the mechanics of doing, but doing it in a way that's trustworthy, that's good, and that serves. So, Father, we just want to thank you and ask you with your patience to continue working with us, encouraging us to do our part, so that we can hear those words by earning and deserving those words when we come to the end of this journey. So, Father, we thank you, we praise you, we give you all glory and honor in the name above all names, Yeshua our Messiah. Amen. 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 All right.